Hey everyone, John here. Just a quick word of warning. We will be spoiling this film in its entirety. So if you have not seen this film and you don't want it spoiled for you, just hit pause real quick and go and watch the movie and then come back and enjoy the show.
My entire generation is a bunch of mouth breathers. They literally have a seizure if you take their phone away for a second. They can't communicate without emojis, and they actually think that the world wants to know that they are eating a taco. Exclamation point, smiley face, smiley face. Like, we give a fuck.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Surviving Chick Flicks, and Happy New Year! Woo!
Woo! 2021's
Yay.
Over!
Yeah. And we have all three hosts on the damn show. So, as we enter into this new season, we have to think back to last season, or last year, however you want to put it. I think of years as seasons, so... Joseph, when we added him onto the show, kept asking, when do I get to pick an episode? And I was like, eventually. And eventually has arrived. And Joseph, what did you pick for us to watch for our first chick flick of 2022?
Okay, you almost forgot which year it was, didn't you?
I nearly said 2023 because time really is an illusion.
Well, I picked the movie Edge of 17.
All right, and let's be clear, this is the one with the female lead and not the LGBT film, because this one was streaming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and also
it falls into our categories.
It does fall into our categories.
Speaking of our categories, what are our categories, Samantha?
Okay, so I think it's fitting. It's the start of a new year that we do a little recap of how we define what a chick flick is with our little genius criteria.
No, you were right the first time.
Can it be both?
I'd like to think so.
So
what's the line from Spinal Tap? There's a thin line between clever and stupid.
True.
I think that describes the entirety of our podcast.
Yes.
Okay, so a chick flick is any film that is written or directed by a female, any film starring a female, or any film that panders to women.
Yeah.
So that does include both every single movie in the Nicholas Sparks catalog.
I feel like, except for that part about written and directed by women, because I seem to know it's mostly men direct his adaptations.
This is true.
But thankfully, we're not here to talk about Nicholas Sparks yet.
But stay tuned.
All right, so why don't we play the trailer for this non-Nicholas Sparks movie, and then we'll get into the discussion.
How was your weekend?
What the fuck?
It was below average.
The Edge of 17 is a brilliant coming-of-age comedy.
Nick is so hot. He works at Petland now.
I should go in there and be like, excuse me, where are the beta fish? And do you want to have sex right now?
Hell yeah.
Not you.
It joins the ranks of classics like Clueless, Mean Girls, and Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Why are you so awkward?
It's a true original.
Why don't you try
what I do when I'm feeling down? I say to myself, everyone is as miserable as I am.
They're just better pretending.
I feel a lot like 17.
Pick a god, any god, and thank them for this movie.
Nick, I like you, and I just want to be with you. I want you to put your mouth on my tits, and I want to feel you inside me. We can do it in the Petland stockroom, Nadine. I can't send this. No. Oh my god, no.
Oh my god.
The Edge of 17.
This isn't so bad. I just want to be with you. I want you to put your mouth on my tits. I want to feel you inside.
God.
We can do it in the Petland stockroom.
Oh my God, say something, please help me.
You need to watch out for run-on sentences.
All right, The Edge of 17, starring Hailee Steinfeld, Woody Harrelson, Haley Lou Richardson, Blake Jenner, Hayden Zito, Kira Sedgwick, and written and directed by Kelly Freeman Craig. So let's start like we always do. Joseph, Sammy, does anyone remember when you saw this film for the first time?
I didn't get to see it in theaters. I don't remember why I didn't get to see it. I just didn't see it. But once it came out to rent, I rented it because I was wanting to see it. I like Hailee Steinfeld and I like Woody Harrelson quite a bit. So yeah. And the trailer's just intrigued me.
Okay.
And watched it and I was like, yeah, this is an absolutely great coming of age movie.
Sammy.
So I do, as a matter of fact, remember when I saw this film because it was last night and my memory. Well, not fantastic. It's not that bad.
All right, and I am the only one, I guess, that did see this in theaters. I don't remember if this is one of those movies that opened in limited theaters and expanded wide, or just open wide release whenever it came out. But I don't remember if it was necessarily opening weekend, but I did see it, you know, in that brief window of time when it was actually in one of our local theaters.
I remember it didn't get talked about a little bit, but not a whole lot.
I don't even remember seeing a preview for it. I remember seeing it on, you know, honestly, I think when it came out on Netflix is the first time I ever noticed it. I might have, like, it sounded vaguely familiar, but I had no idea what, like, the film was about.
Like, it was critically praised, and, like, the people that watched it loved it.
Yeah, and that's...
It just didn't do very great.
Yeah, and that's why I can't remember, like, was this a wide release movie or was this something that expanded because of Oscar?
It could have been that, because I think if it had a bigger push, like, to go wide release, like, when it first came out, I probably would have seen it in theater.
Yeah, this is one of those films I think it was, you know, I think I knew right away, like, if I don't see it in the 7 days that, you know, between... The day we get it and Thursday, I'm not going to get to see it. So that's...
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a question for y'all.
Okay.
Prior to us starting the episode and doing our pre-show stuff, because I think I probably gave away how I feel about it, when Joseph first decided on this film, I want you to tell me, did you think this was a... did y'all think I would survive it?
I thought you would,
Do you want my honest answer?
Yeah.
Of the suggestions he threw out, it was the first one that was streaming, so I went, yes, let's do that. I didn't even take your feelings into consideration. I took my own comfort and ease.
No, I figured that. I'm just curious if you thought, based upon, like, you're not, like, the reason I asked this is, based upon, and I would give my opinion about y'all if y'all hadn't seen it, based upon our entire previous year and my, like, what I survived and what I didn't, did you think this was something I would survive?
Whenever I picked it, because I've always wanted to do this movie because I thought that all three of us would like it. Well, I knew John liked it, but I didn't think that you would like it. This seemed like it had all the ingredients for you to enjoy it.
I assumed you would like it better than Cutthroat Island, which was an actual suggestion.
It was a suggestion. But it was one of those, like, let's see what John says.
John threw something at you, and we were on the phone, which was a feat. So, we brought up coming-of-age films, and I was, in doing my, what little research I did, I'm just going to be honest, I didn't do a whole lot. This film got a lot of comparisons to John Hughes, which I don't think is fair, but it also got a lot of comparisons to Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which I totally think is fair.
Because
I don't know, it just seems like every time anyone does a coming-of-age movie about teens, they're automatically going to associate it with John Hughes. And I don't think it totally applies, but it did bring to mind one particular John Hughes film, and that was Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And the reason it did is based on my feelings towards our main character, which we'll get into.
I definitely see the comparison.
Yeah, I kind of think I know where you're going with that, and that makes total and complete sense. Although, I mean, I don't necessarily think that the comparison when you're talking about coming of age to John Hughes is a bad one. But I will say, this may not be a popular opinion, but as much of a cult phenomenon as he kind of became, not all of his movies are great.
Oh my God, thank you. You can continue to do the show. I know I fired you multiple times, but I 100% agree with you.
Haven't seen them all, but 16 Candles was all right. Breakfast Club to me is like his, I mean, that's his pinnacle. It doesn't get any better than that.
Wait, you're telling me his pinnacle of screenwriting was not Beethoven?
Correct.
Fine, that's hard to believe.
Well, my two favorite Hughes movies is Breakfast Club and Weird Science. I love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where I'm supposed to react? Oh, I've never seen Weird Science.
That baffles me still.
Okay, here's the thing. the first John Hughes films I remember seeing as a child were Ferris Bueller because it was PG.
That's his other best film.
Yeah. And then the other one was Breakfast Club, so which I, you know, R-rated movies typically, you know, the MPAA wants you to be 17 whenever you first see them. I saw it at 10, so I barely understood most of it, but I was obsessed with Breakfast Club, and then like anything else John Hughes wrote that didn't begin with the words National Lampoons really kind of disappointed me. Like, I remember actively not liking She's Having a Baby. I was a child. I have not gone back to see that movie as an adult, but I remember not liking it. Like, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles I saw later in life, so I didn't see that growing up. But 16 Candles, my parents loved that movie. And sold that movie to me the way they also kind of sold The Godfather. And, ooh, I do not. I actively detest 16 Candles. And I have gone back to watch it as an adult, and my feelings still stand, but for different reasons now.
I actually enjoy 16 Candles. It's not... It definitely hasn't aged well.
Oh, no. I don't know if it aged well then because,
true.
You know, there was an entire character called Long Duck Dong. And every time he was on screen, a gong appeared. And it's just like, wow. I can't believe we got away with this in the 80s.
There was a recent release from Arrow. I have the release of it. And he actually talks about it. He goes, yeah, it's kind of... it is problematic. He goes, back at the time, I didn't think anything of it, and it didn't bother me. He goes, but I can completely understand why people don't like that.
Yeah. Well, I just, you know.
Right. And St. Elmo's Fire was good, don't get me wrong, but it's not like.
You know why it doesn't compare to the other John Hughes movies? Because John Hughes didn't write St. Elmo's Fire. He had nothing to do with that movie.
Oh.
Yeah, that is a Joel Schumacher joint. So, you know.
Well, that explains it.
Yep. But it does feel like it should be a John Hughes movie, doesn't it?
Well, right. I mean, given the cast.
Yeah. And I, this is where I actually want a listener to correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that maybe... I know this is wrong, but I'm still going to say it anyway. The only Brat Packer movie that John Hughes didn't make. Now, please, someone email us at whatever Sammy's work email is to tell us the other movies. Yeah. Use as much profanity as needed. Go ahead. So, the film's director...
Who is not John Hughes.
No, Kelly Freeman Craig. Does that name... ring a bell for anyone.
No.
Not, no.
Okay, and that's because she really only started writing or getting stuff made, I think, in the late 2000s, but she wrote the movie Postgrad. Does anyone remember that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember that film.
Yeah.
I wasn't, like, a huge fan, but it was, I mean, it was well done.
Yeah.
I vaguely remember that movie.
Yeah. She also did an uncredited rewrite of Bumblebee.
Really?
Yep. Huh. She did one of the early drafts of Scoob, the animated Scooby-Doo movie that came out a couple years ago. But this is the one that piqued my interest. She has coming soon, I think they're in post-production, the long-awaited film adaptation that was rejected for nearly 50 years. She is doing the feature film adaptation of Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. The Judy Blume.
Oh.
Yeah. To which a lot of people write off as, you know, the Judy Blume movie or story about getting your period. And apparently it is a whole, there is a whole lot more to that book than I, a man who never read that book, realized.
Well, that's cool. I mean, I think the dialogue in this is fantastic. And she clearly knew what she was doing from the get-go. This film had me hooked from the absolute first sentence and the first scene. Just like, not that interaction between her and Woody Harrelson in the very first scene where she tells him that she's going to commit suicide. And just his reaction is, it's something only Woody Harrelson can get away with.
Yeah. Well, two things. Number one, Woody Harrelson did improv a lot of his dialogue, and the director was actually very happy with that. But to backtrack to knew what she was doing from the get-go, she actually didn't. Because when she first sold this script, she had sent it directly to producer James L. Brooks, who did little unknown things like the movie Broadcast News, the movie Spanglish, the TV show The Simpsons. It was actually a completely different script. It was called Besties, and it was focusing more on the relationship between the two girls. And he basically said, you have something here, but you don't have it yet. So she went away, and it took her 4 years to get it to where she thought it was good enough for James Brooks. But it was more of a best friend comedy, and not what it is now.
Because there's hints of that in the movie.
Oh, yeah, there are touches of it. But she very, basically, Brooks told her, whenever you're making this film, if you want to basically, he's like, you want to get the lives of these girls right. And she went back and did something a little bit more, I guess, realistic. This does have the main character that talks like no actual teenager talks, but at the same time talks exactly like a teenager talks.
Well, correct.
That she acts like a teenager.
The absolute realism in this film is unbelievable to me.
Well, yeah, because when you get most movies like these, the teenagers on it are, they know everything, they're smarter than the parents. This one, she's not. She can be an idiot, and she acts on her emotions without even thinking about anything or the consequences. And so, just all about her.
Yeah. So, can I go ahead and say why I compared this to Ferris Bueller?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think okay. I know why you're going to say.
Because as I've gotten older, I have grown to really kind of hate Ferris a little bit because he's a smug little prick. And whenever I saw this movie, I've seen this movie twice now. Once for the show and once back in theaters. And I loved it back in theaters. And I think I was like on this girl's side. And the entire time I was watching this last time, I was just like, girl, you are annoying as fuck.
Well, see, and I had a different reaction because when I first saw it, I was like, oh, she has a lot of problems. She needs help.
Yeah. You know what I mean, what I think that they captured really well, and it's not just the dialogue or the writing or the story. I mean, all of that works together with her, her fantastic performance is I couldn't get past, in a good way, how realistic this movie seemed to me and how well it portrayed actual human relationships, like the complexity of them, the awkwardness of them, and how wrong we get it. Like, I completely agree with your Ferris Bueller analogy. She's not a likable character, but she's not a likable character in a realistic way.
Right.
And her brother is not a likable character initially in a realistic way, but they do a really good job of making him, and I'm sure we'll talk more about him, but taking you, I mean, like, if for 2 hours, this film has fantastic character arcs.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, though. I kind of want to talk about the brother now, in the sense, because I kind of want to stick up for him. I'm like, is he really a, you know, I'm struggling to think of words. Is he not a good person in what he's doing or the way that our main character makes him out to be? And we don't get what he's really about until the scene where he comes to see her at the teacher's house.
I think it's the latter, because we are seeing the movie from her perspective.
Yeah.
Which, you know, he does can have some kind of douchey qualities because that's he's a teenager.
Yeah.
But, you know, we are seeing how she sees him.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when it hits a point in the movie where she's like, oh, I don't know anything and I'm an asshole.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the movie. I know.
Both. He's just like her. He's not I'm not even going to say not a good person. He's just a human being the way that all human beings are. Meaning, he's
flawed.
Just like her. He's flawed. Like, he has annoying characteristics. He does things wrong and he messes up. But none of that, like, so often, and this is not a bad thing. This is not a criticism. I love it. I love an anti-hero. Like, I'm a sucker for a show that centers on an extremely flawed human being. But when they they always go over the top. And that's not bad, but they're always, like, a criminal. They're always a bad person with redeemable qualities. These are not bad people. They're just literally normal human beings.
See, every time you say you love an anti-hero, it makes me remember you're not a big fan of films of the 70s. I'm like, but that was their decade. That was, like, literally the point of everything from 1968 to whenever cocaine took over.
I do have a controversial statement, and I just want to know, do y'all want me to, like, save it for the end, or do you want me to talk about it now? Because there is a potential we'll argue.
I'm going to let Joseph decide.
Fuck it, let's live dangerously. Let's do it now.
This is my statement. Okay, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. Everything I wish that Lady Bird would have done differently, this film did. Like, this film did the coming of age story the way that Lady Bird should have, and everything that was wrong with that film was done correctly in this film, in my personal opinion.
I think the only thing I'm going to take issue with is when you say Lady Bird did it wrong. Everything else, I 100% agree with you. I happen to like the movie Lady Bird, but I also understand why people don't like it, even though everyone that was pissed off in the theater when I saw it brought me such joy because they didn't know what they were getting into. Time I see an A24 film in theaters.
Well, and I don't think that's going to create an argument with us, because I completely understand what you're saying. Because I like Lady Bird, but it was not one of those, like, I have to own this. So I'm like, yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I love Lady Bird, and I was glad for all the acclaim that that it got. And I've seen this film more recently than I have Lady Bird. So what does that say?
Right.
A lot of times where I'm like, I loved it. I'm done. Let's move forward.
Yeah. You said that, but like I said, I do like the movie, but I get what you're saying. I can see why you would like this movie more than Lady Bird. And to be honest, I kind of do as well.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I just felt like it wasn't trying to be something, you know. I guess I didn't feel like this movie was trying too hard.
No, I don't think it was either. I thought it was. It had the right amount of everything it had in there. Like, it had the right amount of snark, the right amount of just melodramatic stuff going on, in the right amount of drama. It handled everything really well.
And if you think about it, it's really difficult to, and I give this film a lot of props, it's really difficult to take a story about nothing, you know, like essentially a perfectly normal life and just like a snippet of it and make it interesting, you know, and invest people in what's going on, to take reality, which is normally why people watch movies, is to escape reality, and actually make something people are invested in. So,
and meanwhile, I think that's the reason why it's more apt to maybe compare this movie to Fast Times at Ridgemont High than in most of the John Hughes films, because someone tell me what the exact plot of Fast Times is. There's not one. It's just snippets of reality.
Yeah.
Plus Spicoli.
Well, it just shows you all these different teenagers what they're going through at this certain point in time.
Well, and that's because the writer of Fast Times did go undercover and pose as a high school student to find out what was really going on in high schools, because I think he graduated early, because, you know, he was a writer for Rolling Stone at like 14.
So are you saying he did a Steve Buscemi and dressed up as like, so what's up, my fellow kids?
Yes, exactly. What he was, the OG Steve Buscemi, who ironically is on my television right
now. So now that we're like a good 20 minutes into this, for those of you listening, if you haven't seen the film, which I don't know why you've listened to this episode that long, John, do you want to tell the listeners what it was about?
Since her first day of school, Nadine was an outcast with no friends until she met Krista, and the pair became inseparable. Krista even helped Nadine recover from the death of her father. Spoiler alert, she never did. But now that she's reached the age of 17, Nadine has grown up into a combative personality, or an asshole for short, hating the entire world except for Krista, with much of the anger in her soul aimed mostly at her jock brother Darian and her mother Mona. One night, Nadine and Krista get drunk with their own party in the house, which was interrupted by Darian having a pool party with his friends. After Nadine and Darian have an argument, and after Nadine passes out, Krista goes downstairs to talk to Darian, and the pair become intimate and form a relationship. This relationship puts a strain on the friendship between Nadine and Krista, and when Darian refuses to choose between his sister and his girlfriend, Nadine shuts them both out. Feeling alone, she admits to having a crush on classmate and PetSmart employee Nick, despite another classmate, animator and filmmaker Nick, having his own crush on her. With no one to turn to, Nadine turns to the only person who might listen to her, her teacher Max, played by Woody Harrelson, with whom she also has a combative relationship, even though he has stated to her that she is his favorite student. Nadine and Erwin go on a date where he attempts a kiss but is shut down. The pair become friends, and she accepts an invitation to the film festival where his short is going to play. After letting the Krista and Darian relationship bug her still, Mona refuses to drive her around the block when dropping her off at school and instead takes Nadine to work with her instead. The pair fight, and Nadine takes Mona's car and somehow doesn't have the police called on her and drives around stopping at a playground and to send a sexually explicit message to Nick, who gets it and seems to want to go out, which sends Nadine into a panic to try to find the right outfit and gets out of the house before her mom can confront her. On their date, Nadine realizes she isn't ready for sex but wants to get to know Nick instead, who shuts her down. And I am putting that mildly. At home, Mona calls Darian for help, who she gets mad at for some reason. We're always trying to play the adult, and then met with the response, "So why do you keep calling me?" Nona calls Max for help, who takes her to his house to wait on Mona to come pick her up, only for it to be Darian and Krista instead. When she refuses his help because he just wants to be the hero, he also shuts her down and leaves. Max drives her home, and with Mona asleep, Nadine apologizes to Darian, and their feud ends. The next morning, Nadine appears to mend fences with Krista on her way to the film festival, where she possibly repairs her relationship with her mom via text and apologizes to Erwin for taking so long to accept his affection. That's pretty much the movie.
Yeah, that about sums it up.
Yeah.
How realistic that relationship was, because they used this relationship between her and him to kind of demonstrate how selfish and self-centered and oblivious she was to what was going on around her, because she'd essentially made him a monster in her head, and she had no concept of reality.
Well, yeah, and they do a good job of that, of making you think that at the first of the movie too,
right?
And but the once you get to know how he is, like, oh no, that's just how she sees it, because that's how she wants to see it,
right? I mean, she's completely selfish, and honestly, at the end of it, I kind of feel the worst for him, because he's had to bear the brunt of everything. Like, yeah. He's had to take care of her mom and her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's what makes the reveal that he's not the villain. Oh, my God. This is that TikTok clip. Am I the villain? I don't think I'm the villain.
I might be the drama.
Yeah. But that whole speech he gives, which I'm sure is going to come up again later, about how, you know, he's only there so he can be the hero, and that, you know, he just loves it that he is having to look at colleges close to home, because, you know, he knows nothing good's going to happen if, you know, she and her mom are left alone in the house. And that, and I think my favorite line in all of that is, and the one person that allows him to breathe, he can't be with, because it will destroy her.
Yeah, I mean, there's just like, their relationship next to her and Woody Harrelson's is probably my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
For like, because it was just so well written. And I think that it's kind of accurate too of a lot of sibling relationships that are kind of structured that way. I can understand where she came from. Like, obviously she was insecure, but no, one of my absolute favorite scenes is, I love that speech that she gave him when she was explaining to him about the memory she had of the night after the night their dad passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, he was crying so hard that he had completely soaked his pillow, so she went and got hers, and how she wished that he loved her enough to do that.
Yeah. Only to, you know, an hour later in the movie, you know, in movie time, realize, mm-hmm. Oh, wait. He does.
Yeah. Well, and they do a really good job of showing how oblivious she is to what she does to everybody else. He's just so focused on her and her problems, and she just doesn't care about anybody else's problems, because hers is more important.
Right. If you think about it, she's kind of surrounded by people that really love her, like Krista, her brother. You know, even her mom. Her mom is kind of selfish,
but she's not a bad mom. Is her mom selfish, or did her mom just bury herself in work as a coping mechanism to the following the loss of her husband, and not realizing that also caused some problems?
Well, I think it's that, but you see it in the very first of the movie too, where they have a combative relationship. They love each other, but they don't see eye to eye, because when she's trying to take her out of the car to go to school, mm-hmm. And their dad was the one that was sitting there going, like, hey, y'all need to calm down. It's just, everything's fine.
Yeah.
And just calms both of them down, and they just kind of listen to him. Well, now that he's gone, they just fight at each other's throats all the time. They love each other. They just can't stand each other half the time.
So that was a lot of words for, so it's a mom and a teenage girl.
Correct.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's true. That's another one of those realistic. I mean, okay, I speak from experience here. Like, part of what this film was for me is I very much connected with it. There can be this perception when you have an older sibling, and if you have an older sibling that's very skilled at things, you can get this thing in your mind, right, about who they are, and you can also, it's not.
Also, you got to remember, I'm the only one without siblings here, so.
Well, I have three siblings, all three younger than me, and they're all sisters.
I forget you're the oldest.
We're a blast, aren't we?
I grew up in a house with, like, seven women, so, yeah. There were things I learned really quick you do not do. If not, you were going to die.
Joseph was an expert on the male-female dynamic by the age of 9.
I remember whenever I got married, she asked my mom, she was like, why? He has really good bathroom etiquette. Why is that? She's like, well, there were 7 of us.
He didn't have a choice.
He didn't have a choice. If not, he wasn't going to live very long.
But I always picture the sibling dynamic. The true one is, has anyone seen that TikTok that floats around? I think the Hype Goblin did it, where it's basically like, if you're my friend, I will make fun of you relentlessly, but the second anyone else does, I will yeet them into the sun.
Yes.
Okay. That's what I pictured the sibling dynamic as, really. It's just like, I'm going to mess with you all day long, but the second someone else does, they're dead.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty accurate. I mean, every once in a while, I think I've come across it before where you have siblings that, like, actually, I mean, honestly, it's not they don't love each other, but they have real legitimate issues with each other and they don't have a good relationship. That does exist. But I would say for the vast majority, that describes a sibling relationship. Like, you can be awful to each other, but Lord help you if somebody else says the same thing you just said to your sibling.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because you say it out of love. They're not.
Right, yeah. Exactly. They're not allowed to say that. It's my punching bag. You can't touch it.
They can't do that to our pledges. Only we can do that to our pledges.
Exactly. So that's kind of something I got out of this, but.
All right. So can I nitpick one thing that's unrealistic about high school? Well, how dare real. You? Realistic, but also unrealistic.
No, I don't want to allow it.
Well, I don't care. I'm going to do it anyway. Okay. Realistic movie day in school where the teacher doesn't want to teach, so he just shows a movie. Unrealistic. No one's ever showed John Ford's Young Mr. Lincoln in a high school setting ever. I'm just like, and there's the screenwriter showing one of her influences. Yep, of course you're a John Ford fan. We all are. Stop it.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he puts on the movie and just leaves the classroom. I was like, no, that's
pretty. Oh, no, that's 100.
I remember many times where they're like, yeah, just watch this. I don't care.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you got to remember, hold on. You got to remember, I'm someone that saw the movie Excalibur in a world history class in high school. Almost as unrealistic. We watched Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Oh, do you want to know what we watched in Spanish class?
Selena?
Zorro.
No, those would have been better choices. Fools Rush In.
What?
Well, I get it because there is a Hispanic person in that movie, barely.
I did not learn anything about the Spanish culture or anything, I don't think.
Look, I'm Facebook friends with my Spanish 1 teacher, and I don't want to say anything horrible about our class, but the only thing I do remember is we learned the Macarena, and that you had better know the correct word for pregnant in case you are trying to speak actual Spanish in Mexico. Because she said that she was, and she wasn't, and she didn't mean to. But in my Spanish 2 class, we watched Selena.
I think we did watch Selena in Spanish 2. Yeah.
It's like the one Spanish language film our high school approved.
I really don't know how we got approved for Fools Rush In. That one still blows my mind.
Look, until that's the fiction of this. I mean, he would probably say something along the lines of, you know, similar things that won't get him fired.
But if there was a character that actually was like this, I think that relationship would have happened. It's just if anybody overheard it, he would have been immediately fired.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just, I don't know, he had the perfect way of dealing with her. And his brand of humor is just, I think all of my best and worst lines are both his.
Best and worst lines?
Yeah, because they're kind of, they're my favorite lines because I think they're funny, but they also have to be the worst because they're horrible things to say.
Weirdly enough, my worst thing is also, she could also qualify for the best thing because it's probably accurate. But we'll get into that when we do segments. And like, and this movie does qualify for the Surviving Chick Flick stamp of approval for a great soundtrack.
Yeah.
Even though I can only remember one song from this movie because I listen to it incessantly, and it's the Struts cover of Ballroom Blitz, which, which, by the way, Joseph, the Struts are, if you took the darkness and made them less funny.
Really?
Yeah, that's basically them.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Because I have a hard time removing the funny out of that.
Listen to a Struts album. It's like, oh, it's all the glam rock without any of the fun. I'm kidding.
Really notice the soundtrack particularly.
Well, after Serendipity, I was really hoping for a good soundtrack, and this one does qualify.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Oh, how did y'all feel about the best friend? I thought she was portrayed very well.
I thought so too, and she's also a character I wish she was given more to do. Like, I wish there was a little bit, maybe at least a scene between her and Darian of, you know, how she was feeling about this whole thing, even though it might have been overkill because we already kind of knew.
Yeah, we already kind of knew, but I get what you're saying. It could have given her character a little bit more depth.
Yeah, but she's also a pretty decent actress too, because she's popped up in stuff here and there.
Well, and I did like where, I think my favorite part with her at the end is where they actually kind of reconcile at the end.
Yeah, and it's a realistic thing of, it's not the, oh, let's have a hug, tearful reunion. It's the it's like, hey, can I call you later? Yeah.
And the whole time, you can tell she really didn't hate her. She was just angry with her.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was just like, I've missed her. Because how many weeks, was it like a few weeks in the time center of this movie?
Yeah, this movie doesn't take place over a very long time.
But like I said, it's just one of those, I thought that was like a little nice little sweet touching moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I kind of agree with John. Like, I wouldn't necessarily call it a weakness, but if I had to nitpick at something in this film, I do think that I wish they'd spent like a little more time on her and Krista's relationship, because it was built up so well, and it just felt like something in the middle was missing just a little bit.
Well, especially at the beginning when they're kind of just bullshitting with each other, they played off each other really well. Because they had some funny lines towards each other at the very beginning. I was like, I like their chemistry they had.
So, do you think, in y'all's opinion, was her reaction to Krista and Darian starting to date legitimate or not?
I think the anger is legitimate because, but I think it's an extreme version, you know, to the fact that, like, okay, I think it's a similar sort of reaction the way one was done in Kissing Booth, where you have that rule, you can date anyone in the world except for your best friend's brother.
Yeah, I get why, because I could get why she would be upset.
Yeah.
That's not something that she was prepared for, didn't think would ever happen. Probably didn't really want it to happen. But at a certain point, it was just like, okay, you need to get over it.
Yeah. Also, can we just remark that I made a reference to the Kissing Booth?
Well, it is acknowledged.
You know, we still have one more of those to go.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
So, I'm going to ask this one of Sammy.
Okay.
All right. The text conversation between her and her mother at the very end. With all of that has gone on, is that realistic?
Actually, I want to say it is. And I kind of like made a mental note about that. In the sense of, I think it was in two ways. One, I think that was very true to the character they had built with her mom. But also, I do think it's very normal as a parent, which I want to kind of echo what I said earlier. Her mom was kind of selfish, but and I think that they sort of tried to throw that out there before her father passed away. But I think it obviously got worse. But I don't think she was a bad mom. I think she cared. I do think she paid attention to what was going on in her kids' life. Like, obviously, she still drove her to school.
She didn't want to drive her to school.
I know. But I think it's natural for a parent to, in her situation, to sit there and struggle with what to say to their teenager who's going through something. Like, obviously, the only thing she cared about was that she was safe.
And that was the only thing that Nadine was telling her is that, hey, I'm safe. And I think that's, and yeah, that is the most important thing. Like, anything else is secondary.
Right.
Oh, I was wondering, the one that she ends up with at the end of the movie. What is his name? Andrew?
Irwin.
I don't know why I said Andrew.
That's okay. I called him Nick earlier.
That's true. How did y'all feel about him? I thought he was put in there pretty well.
He was. He is one of those characters that does, in a way, only exist in movies. A lot of times the creative types are not well respected, and he seemed to be.
True. I thought they had a pretty decent relationship, even though she just kind of treated him as a convenience at first.
Yeah. Well, and also she was wanting to bang Nick in the back of a PetSmart.
Correct. I do think that her relationship with Irwin, down to like how it got started, was pretty realistic. Because, you know, in high school, middle school, a lot of times that's how you build friendships. It's like the rando that you sit next to that you accidentally have a conversation with and find out that, oh, this rando likes things I like. And then all of a sudden you become friends.
I think that's how you all friended me.
I think the most unrealistic thing was her little situation with Nick, which I guess we should go ahead and talk about real quick before we move on to our segment.
Yeah.
I had a rough time with that because he was a complete asshole. Unjustified. You know, his behavior was ridiculous. It's just hard to equate because, you know, she had every right to back out and to not even be thought less of because she backed out. You know, he didn't have any right to think less of her or to treat her like that. Mm-hmm. But she also went a little nuts with the things she said to him.
Yeah, she did. And I do kind of appreciate that a little bit, because when she gets done writing it, she's like, I sound like a psycho.
Like, yeah.
It's like, yes, you do.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's one of those, she shouldn't have done that. She should not have.
Like, what was he supposed to think that she wanted?
Well, exactly. Mm. But at the same time, he should realize, okay, texting is one thing. Actually doing something is different. It's one of those, when you actually get to it, it's like, okay, yeah, this is not what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, but he's the teenage male in the teenage comedy. That's not the guy we like, so of course he's going to be a dick.
I think they showed that from the beginning, that he's kind of a dickish character. Like, she's fantasized about him. She doesn't know who he is, but she's fantasized about him this whole time. He's not going to match up to what she's thinking.
Right.
It's a fantasy. It's all in her head.
Right, it's not like the real romance I have going with Anna Kendrick. That's real. This is
That's just the tale as old as time, John. Come on.
Right.
But I do, one of my favorite parts is where she shows the text to Woody Harrelson's character. And she's like, I need any advice? He goes, you're going to have to want to watch the sentences. That's terrible.
He's just brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
scene at the beginning where he starts, he reads off a suicide note to her that he wrote.
And I also, that's another thing they did that I completely loved. I love that when she goes over to his house, like, she doesn't know anything about him, which oftentimes we don't with our teachers. And when she goes over to his house, she gets to see this completely other side of him. Like, the movie kind of sets it up where, oh, he's probably like a bachelor who, you know, is self-centered and is...
wife.
Right. And then he's got a family and he's got a wife. And I don't know. I just liked that particular choice.
Well, I think it was also kind of set up in a way because, you know, she obviously doesn't know anything about him. And it's just like, you should date my mom. Which is, you know, what a completely rational human being says.
Well, as she's seen throughout this movie, she doesn't do a lot of things rational in this movie.
Oh, no, she doesn't.
Like when she's about to call 911 when she's drunk.
Mm-hmm.
That was...
Beep, 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 beep. It's another example, which... This movie is a perfect example of showing, not telling. It's just another example of how she doesn't pay any attention. She doesn't ask people. She doesn't learn. Like, she makes massive assumptions about people.
Oh, yeah. I remember doing that.
I like how you say that, implying you stopped.
I'm trying to make myself look a little bit better here, okay? I'm not going to say that I did it yesterday.
You did it yesterday, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
So, is there anything else we have to cover before we move into our segments?
I think if there's anything left, it's probably going to get covered in segments. So, I think we're safe to move forward.
All righty. Well, for any first-time listeners, we have 2 to 3 segments, depending on the episode. And,
it just occurred to me. What? For our first time listeners, did we even introduce ourselves at the beginning of the episode?
You know what? It's just
because last week it was I'm dying and I'm also dying.
If you want to know who we are, go back and listen to one of our previous episodes.
Like, even go back 2 or 3. That's probably accurate. Sometimes we're represented by sock puppets.
That is very true.
So, one of our first segments is Best Line, Worst Line, where we pick our best lines and worst lines from the, we're not creative at naming things here.
No, we are definitely.
So anyway.
Look, I came up with the concept of the show, and I just relied on the rest of you to do the rest.
That was
a mistake.
I've learned this since.
All right, let's start with you, John. Best line.
Let's start with Joseph.
Okay.
Oh.
Actually, why not best line, worst line? Like, just throw them both out there.
I don't really have a worst line. I didn't really pay attention, because I liked a lot of the lines in there. I don't think, nothing really stood out to me. But one of my favorite, I had a couple, like, one of it where she's talking to her best friend and talking about Nick. She's like, I'm going to probably run into him into the pet store. Like, oh, where are the betas at? And would you like to put your penis inside me in the pet later? So I was like, that's a really funny line.
Wait, that's not how you ask for fish?
That's
no. How
I ask fish all the time. That's why they asked me to leave. Okay.
Well, and whenever she says, goes up to Woody Harrelson because she just drank all weekend. And so I forgot to do my homework. I didn't get to do my homework. My dad passed away, so it's been really hard. He goes, oh, when did date of passing? 2011. He goes, I have a strict 1-year policy on dead relatives. that's the only ones, because those two lines made me laugh really out loud.
So I have one that qualifies for both, and that is her entire text message to Nick.
Yes,
because it's so well done, and her reaction to reading it all is, you know, perfect. That whole "I sound like a psycho," but the actual text of it is god awful.
But at the same time, that it was supposed to be.
Yeah. And I kind of feel the same way about her monologue about how she's an old soul. She likes old music and old movies and old people. It's just like, oh, you are insufferable.
Didn't we all say shit like that when we were...
I don't know what you're talking about. I have always been down with the cool kids. Or cookies, whatever that song says. I was going to say, and I do really like the tech whenever her mom calls her while she's at the film festival and that I'm safe, and then the evolution that gets to, okay. And I like Blake Jenner's monologue where he basically is putting her in her place. And now, Sammy, you may recite every line Woody Harrelson said in this movie.
Yes, best line, every line said by Woody Harrelson. No, they're kind of my best and worst line. Joseph stole one of mine. One of mine was definitely the, I have a 1 year for dead and dying. No, one of my other ones was after that, when they're on the Ferris wheel, that long spiel, like where she's guessing his family and what his parents are like. And then she goes, oh no, I really hope none of that was racist. I don't know. I thought that whole scene was a really great exchange. And then she goes on to compare him to an old person. I thought that was really great. Like, she's super awkward, but in the best way. And then I love all of Darian's speeches, but I love the speech he gives his mom too.
Yeah, that was a really good speech that he gave her.
I'd like to backtrack and also add whenever she's talking to Irwin and say, basically since he's had that house to himself for three months, he's like, you should hire some burglars to come in and you can relive Home Alone.
Alrighty, so our next segment is likes and dislikes. Once again, not great at naming things.
Well, I don't hear any, options being put forward for things to call them. You know, we've only been doing this for 65 weeks.
Okay, John Joseph, what did you like about the film that we've not talked about?
We could call it The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Ooh.
Oh.
I like that.
See, we should have hired Joseph at the beginning.
Oh no, I can't work under pressure. I just throw shit out there.
What do you think we do? What about us ever gave you the impression we were prepared for shit?
John, you specifically said we're prepared for everything.
I told you that.
That's what, and I believed you.
Okay, well, with that in mind, John Joseph, what was the good about this film that we haven't already talked about?
Can we just say Woody Harrelson and move on?
Yes, that is acceptable.
So the good is Woody Harrelson, the bad is everything Nadine does up until she gets her ass handed to her. And then, oh no, wait, and then the ugly is everything Nadine does in this movie.
I don't know if there's anything we haven't talked about that. Actually, I really liked the very end with his film that he made and the
little things
they had. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, it's like, oh, that wasn't about you. Not everything revolves.
Well, I feel like an asshole now. Like, no, that was totally about you.
You knew that was coming, and yet somehow he did such a good job. It actually caught me off guard. I was kind of like, wait. Who was it about?
I always say the bad was like one thing that really, it just made me cringe, but it was supposed to make you cringe, is where she starts mocking her, not really her friend anymore, but her starts mocking the friends that she's hanging out with now. I think they were at the Walker. I was just like, that just made me go, oh, don't, why'd you go there? I think there's anything really bad in this movie. I'm sorry.
No, you're, I don't have a lot that we haven't talked about. I would just say, like, I don't know. I think they did a fantastic job of portraying real life and the actual complexity of human relationships. And they did a particularly good job in, like, an hour and 45 minutes of giving all of these characters arcs that somehow made sense. And yeah, that's, I mean, that's kind of it. And as far as the bad, the only thing that always bothers me is I hate cringe humor. So I hate the awkward denied kiss. When Erwin goes in for a kiss and she denied, like, I always, that always just makes me cringe. But his reaction to it was great when he starts screaming at the Ferris wheel operator to let him off. So that did kind of turn into a good moment, but initially. All right, are we ready for the big question?
I think we are. And I think since Joseph picked the movie, he should ask.
All right. Well, Sammy, John, did we survive this?
Sammy?
I absolutely survived this. I thought it was a fantastic way to kick off the year. I wasn't even sure I was going to, like, I wasn't looking forward to watching it. And then I was absolutely hooked. Well, I mean, well, it was like 11:30 when I started it.
Well, and to be fair, after 65 episodes, when it, no matter how excited we are about an episode, there is a point where it becomes, ah, fuck, homework.
Right. That's, yeah, it feels like a chore. But as soon as I started watching this film, like, I'm really glad that you introduced this to me. So thank you, because it was really, really good.
Well, I'm glad I could make a good suggestion. John,
just wait till Cutthroat Island.
yeah, just wait then you'll hate me for it.
That's his Caligula. As for me on this movie, yeah, I absolutely survived this. I didn't go back and look, but I know this ended up on my best of the year list whenever it came out. For some reason, I'm thinking it was number 3 that year. I don't remember. I also don't remember what number 1 was, because that was a lot of extra work on me to look it up. But I liked this movie, and I'm glad you suggested it, because it was nice coming back to this movie and also watching it from a slightly different perspective this time. So yeah, definitely yeah, strong survive.
Yeah, this time it was from an old man perspective. Like, oh my God, I hate you. Yeah.
Like, from an old man perspective, formerly from a slightly less old perspective, yes. Because it's not like we're talking about a film from the 80s.
True. And no, go ahead.
I was going to say, this is your time to defend your movie.
Oh, well, I don't think I have to defend it that much. But, of course, I survived this movie. When I first saw it, I loved it. And it was one of those, like, I have to buy this movie because I have a good-sized collection. And that's one of those, I'm like, oh, this is one of those I will probably just go like, oh, I want to watch this movie, The Edge of 17. I haven't seen this in a couple years, you know. And just pop it in and just enjoy it. I'm like, oh, yeah, I forget how much I love this movie.
Yeah, I definitely think I will come back and watch this movie again.
Yeah, this is a good pick to start things off to not anger Sammy. So that way later, whenever...
But we ease into you see, it.
Yeah. I was going to say, this is a perfect way to start the year, because it was a film we all liked. It was like a palate cleanser.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I did slightly like last year when we kicked off things with Hedwig. But that was also I don't know how she's going to react to this. This was, I think we know how she's going to react to this, but it could have gone either way.
I was fairly confident she was going to like it.
Yeah. I literally was like, oh, that's streaming. That's perfect. This is beginning, middle, and end of how I felt about things.
What about Sammy's like, I don't give a shit about her feelings until the podcast.
Well, it was because you weren't going to be on the Serendipity episode. And I was just like, I've kept her waiting long enough, so yeah, just throw something out. And it was met with, like, no resistance. Yeah.
You know, sometimes that's the best way to go about things.
Yeah, pretty much. And now, let's bring the crushing reality back. I believe, according to our schedule, Sammy gets to pick the next one. So, what are you making us watch?
Now I'm like torn, okay? Because I'm a little bit torn. Because this kind of puts me in the mood to be like, oh, maybe I should be generous and pick something I think you guys will like. But I kind of think we should do something fun. And I think we should revisit one of John's nemesis, That is not Nicholas Hart.
Oh.
I think that we need to, and you know, it's 2022. I'm feeling it's going to be a good year. We're going to have a strong start, and we should visit the Hygelpocalypse.
Oh, we haven't brought her up in a while.
Yeah, so I was kind of thinking it was time. So next week we're going to do Life as We Know It.
Oh.
I've
seen this one.
Also starring John's nemesis and one of the lead actors from John's favorite film of 2020. Is it 2020 or 2021? We did Safe Haven.
Oh. It feels like an eternity.
You can, if you listen closely, you can hear John Saltz just screaming
no, that about
pain. But
that
good
wasn't
news,
the soul,
it's streaming.
That was just John,
it's streaming on Netflix, so
the listeners can suffer. I mean, watch along with us.
So I'm kind of thinking we should actually watch this movie all together and just record while we listen to John. Slowly just, die during this movie.
We could could actually make this a viewing party.
No, because I don't want to throw any things in your homes. So yeah, so next week we're gonna do Life and Something Like It or whatever the hell we were watching. Life and How to Live It. Wait, that's an REM song. All right, so does anyone have anything they want to plug?
No.
I do.
Okay.
I know. Right. So over the break, I started watching something called Man in the Arena. It is a documentary series because someone decided that Sammy's obsession with Tom Brady should be validated, and they decided to make a docuseries on Tom Brady, and it has been fantastic. I highly recommend it. It was I feel personally very validated and about all my thoughts on him.
And how he sometimes dresses as a Batman villain. Look, I you can say what you want about the man's athletic ability, but sometimes he does not have the best fashion sense. That's coming
true.
From me. And that's coming from someone who wore the same Misfits shirt for 2 years until it fell apart.
I'm not necessarily going to argue with you. No, but in all seriousness, actually, the documentary, I mean, in its essence, it's about him, but it doesn't really focus on him so much as football as a whole and the franchise he was playing in and the era. You know, from when he first started all the way up to, I haven't seen the final episode, but I'm kind of hoping present day. So it's really good.
They haven't finished it yet. It's going to end with him throwing his jersey into the stands and walking out during the third quarter.
Oh, wait, no. It's going to have him going on to win the game anyway.
Sorry, I just had to get in the Antonio Brown dig just to, incredibly date this episode. So I actually have a random plug. Motley Crue. I know that's a hot take, but they remastered their first five albums for their 40th anniversary, and it's the best Motley Crue has ever sounded. Like, I didn't like a lot of the early albums, you know, outside of the hits, because it always sounded like I didn't like the production on it. And now they're loud, like they're supposed to be. So I was actually pleasantly surprised.
Oh.
Yeah, so they're all streaming on Spotify. So just you may have to search for the Shout at the Devil album like I did, but they're all remastered and sounding better than ever. So, yeah, if you like Motley Crue, now's your time. And did they bother to remaster the John Corabi album or anything that came after it? God, no. Why would they do that? Even though that Karabi album is criminally underrated, and I will fight anyone who disagrees with me. Joseph's going to take do my fighting for me. It's just...
What now?
Yeah. You're going to beat up people who say that Hooligans Holiday sucked.
No, I'm not doing that.
Should, because you should know deep down that that's probably the most underrated Motley Crue album.
That it may be. I just don't want to do that.
Fine, then we're never doing Cutthroat Island.
What is it that Meatloaf says? Oh, no, wait, that doesn't apply.
I lost the ability to sing 10 years ago, but that hadn't stopped me yet. And I think that's something he said. Not going to lie, weirdly enough, before the recording, if it had gone any longer, I was going to be re-listening to Bat Out of Hell, because that is one of my Desert Island albums. I will talk shit about that man's singing ability presently, but about 1975 to before Hang Cool Teddy Bear, and then that man had an amazing vocal range.
And that concludes Meatloaf talk.
At least for this episode, I'm sure Meatloaf will come up again. I don't know where or when, but it might happen.
If we ever do Spice World.
I told you what's keeping us from doing Spice World.
I have a copy.
Okay, that makes one of us. You need to find two more.
That's what eBay's for.
Sammy, find us two copies of Spice World. All right, well, guys, thank you for being on this episode, and for the love of God, please join us next week, as I just basically yell the entire time.
Surviving Chick Flicks is brought to you by the Circle of Jug. The show is edited by John, and all clips used are the property of their copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, and leave us a 5-star rating at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get the show. If there's anything you would like us to cover on the show, or just drop us a line at survivingchickflicks@gmail.com. The show is copyright 2022, Circle of Jug Productions, all rights reserved.
People that thinks everything is about them.
This is just messing with you. Yeah, I'm just messing with you. I set that up.